kaj pa je to?
Ja, kultivator.
Gre za neko vrsto apatije.
To lahko reče samo kreten, noben drug.
Socialni invalid in ga je nemogoče urejati.
Drugi kandidat.
Pa pije, kadi, masturbira, vse kako ni človeka počne. Nihče tega ne ve.
Vsak petek skultiviramo dogodek tedna.
Lahko po kriterijih Radio Študent, težko pa po evropskih kriterijih.
Ampak na drug način, kot vi tu mislite.
Kultivator vedno užge.
Da pač nekdo sploh omenja probleme, ki so, in da pravzaprav sploh nekdo sproži dogajanje v družbi.
To drži. Drži.
Pozdravljeni. Danes se ponovno posvečamo pridobivanju litija, tokrat sicer ne projektu Jadar v Srbiji, ampak rudniku Barroso na Portugalskem. Ta projekt kopanja litija je eden izmed 47 projektov, ki jih je konec marca odobrila Evropska komisija za povečanje evropskih zmogljivosti pridobivanja strateških surovin. Na Portugalskem sta bila potrjena dva rudnika, poleg rudnika Barroso tudi rudnik Romano, ampak mi se bomo posvetili bolj rudniku Barroso. No, za analizo časovnice projekta Barroso in vzroke za nasprotovanje lokalnih iniciativ se mi bo pridružil tim iz aktualno politične redakcije Živjo.
Živjo. No, bi mogoče začel najprej s temi strateškimi projekti. Torej, gre za 47 strateških projektov, ki jih je Evropska komisija odobrila, se pravi, konec marca letos, in ti projekti se bodo izvajali v 13 državah članicah. Največ 9 se jih bo izvajalo v Franciji, 7 v Španiji, 6 na Finskem in pa 5 na Portugalskem. Zdaj, ko gledaš ta zemljevid, v bistvu takoj opaziš, da se največ pridobivanja, torej projektov, kjer bodo dejansko kopali surovine, poteka na periferiji Evropske unije, torej državah kot je Romunija, Finska, Španija in pa Portugalska. Zdaj, ti projekti so namenjeni pridobivanju, predelavi, recikliranju in pa nadomeščanju teh strateških surovin.
Zdaj, tle si omenil te strateške surovine, kaj vse sploh spada v to kategorijo?
Ja, se pravi, s temi strateškimi projekti bodo dostopali do 14 od 17 strateških surovin, ki pa so naštete v Evropskem aktu o kritičnih surovinah. Torej, najbolj očiten je ta litij, o katerem se veliko govori v zadnjem času, potem pa so zraven še kobalt, baker, grafit in pa tudi redke zemlje, o katerih smo tudi že veliko slišali. Največ projektov je namenjenih litiju, se pravi 22. To pomeni od njegove predelave, procesiranja in do kopanja, potem 12 niklju, 11 pa grafitu. In zdaj, če se sam malo še navežem na tisto, kar sem že omenil, se pravi, da bo največ projektov kopanja, pridobivanja potekalo na periferiji Evrope. Sodeč po podatkih World Population Reviewa, ima največ svetovnih zalog oziroma največ zalog litija v Evropi Nemčija, potem Češka je na drugem mestu, Španija na tretjem in Portugalska na četrtem šele, kljub temu pa, da bo največ projektov kopanja na Portugalskem. Sama Nemčija je pa recimo dobila zgolj, pač samo en projekt se bo pa izvajal dejansko v Nemčiji.
Ok, ampak zakaj se je Evropska komisija lotila tega?
Ja, se pravi, s temi strateškimi projekti je Evropska komisija naredila prvi korak v bistvu izvajanju Evropskega akta o kritičnih surovinah, ki pa je stopil v veljavo maja lani. Ta akt predvideva, da mora Evropska unija do leta 2030 letno pridobiti vsaj 10%, predelati 40% in reciklirati 25% letne porabe strateških surovin. Nekako pa je samo bistvo akta, da EU diverzificira dobavo kritičnih surovin in pa okrepi dobavne verige, se pravi od pridobivanja pa do predelave. In ravno zato je akt predvideval, da bodo države članice tudi odobrile te strateške projekte In res na dan, ko je akt stopil v veljavo, je Evropska komisija tudi objavila razpis za prepoznavo projektov kot pač te strateške projekte. Ampak tukaj je potrebno omeniti, da gre tu, samo tukaj, pač v teh primerih samo za naziv. S tem, ko oni dobijo naziv strateškega projekta, še ne pomeni, da bodo kar naenkrat odobreni oziroma pač nič podobnega. Gre res zgolj za naziv, ampak bo pa Evropska komisija namenila več kot 22 milijard evrov za to, da ti projekti postanejo operativni. In tukaj se lahko vrneva nazaj na ta evropski akt o kritičnih surovinah, ker zaradi tega akta, mislim, ta akt pospešuje postopek izdaje dovoljenja, ki po novem ne bo trajal več kot 27 mesecev, predtem je pa trajal nekje med 5 do 10 let, oziroma je lahko trajal tudi do 10 let mogoče.
Mm-hmm. Kaj pa je pa s tem rudnikom Barossa?
Ja, se pravi, kot si omenil že na samem začetku, sta na Portugalskem bila odobrena dva projekta. In sicer prvi je rudnik Romano, drugi pa je ta rudnik Barossa. In čeprav je tudi prvi, torej rudnik Romano, zelo problematičen in se bi mu lahko več posvetili, se bomo mi nekako bolj ukvarjali s tem rudnikom Barossa. Ta rudnik je zelo blizu kraja Covas do Barossa, čisto na meji Španijo. V Španiji na drugi strani meje pa je tudi bil odobren en projekt kopanja litija. In zdaj na tem mestu, kjer je zdaj predviden rudnik litija, je včasih stal en drug rudnik, dejansko bolj nek kamnolom med drugim tudi kremena, ampak se je v tem kamnolomu zelo malo dogajalo. Na to temo se bomo še vrnili, ampak pomembno je, da pač je tukaj že stal en rudnik, ker trenutni projekt, ki ga izvaja Savena Lithium, je de facto samo hčerinsko podjetje od britanskega podjetja Savena Resources. In to podjetje je sprva leta 2017 prevzelo 75% delež v projektu Barossa in na to dve leti kasneje prevzelo lastništvo v celoti. Zdaj, ta projekt poteka na območju velikosti 593 hektarjev, samo rudarjenje, torej kopanje, pa na nekak območju velikem 70 hektarjev. Zdaj, samo za primerjavo, nekak eno atletsko igrišče oziroma atletsko igrišče je veliko 1,2 hektarja. Se pravi, tukaj govorimo o velikosti skoraj 70 atletskih igrišč samo za kopanje, medtem ko skoraj 600 hektarjev veliko zemljišče v celoti. Zdaj, ta regija Barossa je v bistvu del območja pomembnih sistemov kmetijske dediščine. In to je nek sistem organizacije Združenih narodov za prehrano, ki pomeni, da gre za pač neko območje, na katerem se življenje lokalne skupnosti tesno prepleta z lokalnim ekosistemom. Kaj to pomeni v praksi? V bistvu po besedah naše sogovornice in pa pač opisa tega projekta, to pomeni, da ti kmetje, ki živijo na tem območju, so dejansko samozadostni in se ukvarjajo specifično tukaj zgolj z živinorejo.
In zato pa te lokalne skupnosti nasprotujejo rudnikom v regiji, ali kaj?
Ja, dejansko, zaradi tega, ker pač rudnik bo ogrozil njihovo življenje, ne? Mislim, njihov vir preživetja dejansko. Ne samo to, gre tudi v bistvu za to, da bo ta rudnik povzročil neko škodo okolju in prav zato so se številne skupine, ki rudniku nasprotujejo, že večkrat organizirale v boju proti temu rudniku, ne samo zgolj s protesti, ampak tudi z nekimi blokadami in pa sodnimi procesi. Zdaj, razloge za nasprotovanje pa strne predstavnica lokalne inicijative Združeni za obrambo Covas do Barossa, Katarina Alves Skerat.
Why do we oppose the mines? We oppose them because, first of all, an issue is an issue of justice, that you should ask a community who's always lived sustainably to pay the price of, so that you can have other, continue to consume and continue to use resources in the same way, okay, which is, really unfair, first of all. but also because we've come to realize it is a pointless sacrifice, and it is a sacrifice that only is only going to make matters worse. As you say in English, you know, if you want to get out of the hole, stop digging. You're not going to get out of the hole if you keep digging.
Zdaj, že prej si omenil okoljsko škodo, ki bi jo rudnik povzročil. Kakšne bi bile te predvidene posledice?
Ja, v bistvu, mogoče za začetek bi najprej omenil, kakšen rudnik bi to bil. Ne? Se pravi, tukaj gre za 4 rudnike, de facto rudnike odprtega kopa, kar pomeni, da pač bi bilo lokalno okolje oziroma nek ta ekosistem popolnoma uničen. In zdaj, najbližji rudnik bi bil oddaljen nekje 750 metrov stran od najbližje hiše v vasi in bi bil globok okoli 100 metrov. Ampak to ni vse, poleg tega pač, da je sam rudnik, bi tam bila tudi neka, no ne tovarna za predelavo, ampak pač nek obrat za predelavo vsega pridobljenega in pa hkrati je predviden tudi neki jez za odlaganje odpadkov. Sam rudnik je predviden, da bi pridobil dovolj litija za okoli 500 tisoč baterij za električna vozila. No zdaj pa na to okoljsko škodo, ki si je omenil, v bistvu zato, da projekt zaživi, mora vedno dobiti neko potrdilo okoljske agencije in na to bomo še prišli, ampak vsi strokovnjaki, s katerimi so se te lokalne inicijative posvetovale, pač so ugotavljali iste stvari in to je, da rudnik povzroča neko nepovratno okoljsko škodo, ker med drugim rudnik zahteva tudi okoli 600 kubičnih metrov vode in to bi črpali iz bližnje reke. In ko so jih vprašali, kaj se bo zgodilo s to reko, so rekli, da jo bodo preprosto prestavili. To je nekako zgolj ponazoritev pač stališča podjetja, kako bodo upravljali z nekimi okoljskimi viri. In zdaj natančneje pa vplive rudnika na okolje predstavi sogovornica.
We've got specialists telling us that the environmental impact assessment, that basically the whole project should just be thrown out because it is too risky. One of the specialists that looked at the tailings facility is concerned that there is a tailing dam, which they refuse to call a dam. They insist that the filter tailings are going to come out dry, you know, in a region that has got very high rainfall. And less than 1 kilometer from the river, in a very steep mound of 140 meters high. They insist that this is safe. The specialist that looked into it is really concerned and believes that the whole project should be thrown out just on the back of that, because it will affect the whole north region, because it's close to the tributary of an important river which flows into the Atlantic Ocean, and in the north of Portugal. So yeah, it's really, really concerning the fact that this has been allowed to go through, the fact that that the Environmental Protection Agency recognizes a number of impacts, significant, and in fact they actually use that word, very significant impacts of the mine in the region, and yet they sort of seems to be this conditional license seems to have been a political decision, and again this rush to pass the environmental impact assessment through this law that simplifies the process is really, really, really concerning.
Kaj je pa pol trenutno stanje tega poročila o okoljskih posledicah tega projekta?
Ja, v bistvu je to zelo kompleksno vprašanje, ker za odobritev te predhodne ocene, raziskovanja ali pa poskusnega izkoriščanja mora podjetje pripraviti to okoljsko poročilo, ki si ga omenil. In zdaj to poročilo mora odobriti ali pa vsaj delno odobriti portugalska okoljska agencija, znana kot APA. In že prej sva govorila o tem rudniku, ki je stal tukaj prej oziroma ki je bil dejansko aktiven že leta 2006, ker takrat je podjetje zadolženo za tist rudnik že moralo ustvariti ta Environmental Impact Assessment, torej to poročilo o posledicah in okoljskih vplivih, ki bi jih projekt imel. In takrat je bilo to poročilo sprejeto, ker je šlo v bistvu za veliko manjši rudnik, kot bi šlo zdaj. In prvič je Savena, torej podjetje, ki pa trenutno se zavzema, mislim, ki bi vodilo to projekt, je okoljsko poročilo prvič oddala leta 2020, ampak ga je pristojna agencija dvakrat zavrnila. Prvič julija in nato drugič decembra. Zdaj, aprila leta 2021 je potekalo javno posvetovanje o presoji vplivov na okolje za širitev rudnika, julija 2022 pa je APA, torej ta okoljska agencija, izdala negativno okoljsko poročilo zaradi, in to je dejanski citat, nepopravljivih negativnih vplivov na okolje. No in generalni direktorat za energetiko in geologijo se je na tej točki umešal in si dejansko izboril, da je se je ta rok za oddajo sprejemljivega okoljskega poročila podaljšal. No in maja leta 2023 je APA pogojno odobrila to okoljsko poročilo in izdala Environmental Impact Statement, se pravi dejansko pač neko izjavo o okoljskih posledicah, okoljskem vplivu tega projekta. In septembra 2023 je lokalni svet Covas do Barossa začel dve tožbi za izpodbijanje te izjave. Zdaj, zato da se ta rudnik začne, zato da postane operativen in zato da ko lahko enkrat pač začnejo kopati, morajo dobiti še poročilo o okoljski skladnosti izvedbenega projekta in pa na koncu še končno okoljevarstveno dovoljenje. In zdaj celoten proces pridobivanja okoljskega poročila predstavi Alves Skerrit.
In september 2022 we find out through the media that the mining company had informed their investors that the environmental impact assessment that they were going to work with the Environmental Protection Agency in order to, you know, their words, they were going to collaborate in order to optimize the environmental impact assessment. The assessment then was given 10 days. We were given 10 days for public consultation. And during that period, you know, these 10 days go against the ARAS committee convention, which is something that Portugal has signed to, and also against European directives. And yet they did these 10 days for public consultation. It then got extended for an additional 10 days, still, you know, not the 30 days that it was should have been granted, and we through that public consultation we found out that actually that that the first environmental impact assessment had been failed, so it had not been granted, and that a new one was being resubmitted. But by then a new law, basically along the lines of the Critical Raw Materials Act, that basically intended to simplify the environmental processes, had been passed, and the Environmental Protection Agency had 6 months to basically assess the environmental impact assessment. And after those 6 months, they basically granted a conditional declaration of environmental impact. So they issued a document that has, I think, 130 or 140 pages, I can't remember now, but you know, quite a few pages, with 189 points that the mining company has to sort of answer to. They've got to do another further work and answer those demands by the Environmental Protection Agency and do more prospection before they are allowed to mine.
Dobro, sam, kam pa je bilo pa zdaj s tem prejšnjim rudnikom?
Ja, se pravi, ta prejšnji rudnik je bil dejansko bolj kamnolomno, pač na nekem območju 120 hektarjev. Licenco za rudarjenje je podjetje, takratno podjetje Sabreis, dobilo leta 2006 in si tako zagotovilo v bistvu 30-letno dovoljenje za izvajanje pač rudarskih del na tem območju. Ampak kot sem že rekel, je bilo pač tega rudarjenja zelo malo in tudi lokalno prebivalstvo je bilo zelo neizpostavljeno temu delu. In zdaj ta pogodba z državo, ki so jo sklenili, pač ta licenca, se je spremenila leta 2016 in kot pojasni sogovornica, je to licenco potem prevzela Savena.
The license that they had basically managed to get through to this license, getting a license. There's this mining company called Cyberize at the time, got a mining license for feldspar and quartz in an area of 120 hectares, which meant that, and feldspar and quartz was going to be used for ceramics. And basically what happens is they go there, it's like a quarry, they cut the rock, and then basically they take it somewhere else to be processed to then for ceramics. And in this rock, one of the minerals in the rock that's got feldspar and quartz is also lithium. And supposedly the presence of lithium makes the process cheaper, supposedly. But what had not been done or what they were not doing or was not there was basically this idea that you could actually remove and refine the lithium. So it's a very, very different thing, you know, getting feldspar and quartz, which is a compound, right? Which you've got there, you've got the rock, you cut it, you mash it, you do whatever to then do the ceramics, to then having to refine lithium. And again, I'm not from sciences, but from what I understand, you know, lithium is a very difficult mineral to refine. If you manage to get it, to get just the element itself is highly reactive, you tend to get this lithium oxide. That's what you tend to get naturally if you do get it. So I know that the process to refine it is very complex. So this idea that then suddenly you've got lithium, to me, you know, was really alarming that they would use this license. So they basically picked up this license, this 2006 license. They increased the area. By then, the mining company was called something else, or I don't know if the mining company had grown or been taken over by another mining company or whatever it was, had changed. Not much mining had been done at all. The area had increased. They then had a contract for, you know, a much larger area. This contract was granted in 2016. And in 2017, the license is then sold Savannah Resources or to Slipstream, which was then sold to Savannah Resources.
Kako pa se je prihod, v bistvu kako se je lokalno prebivalstvo odzvalo na prihod britanskega podjetja, pa pojasni Alves Skerritt.
The community were perplexed, really. They didn't really understand their rights, didn't understand what they were doing, but they knew that there was a license that had not really been active. There had been some, like a few trucks being taken out of, you know, one of the mining areas. And that was just basically some rock that had been taken out that was going to go and be processed somewhere else. It was a quarry, really. It was nothing else. And so much so that they had to, that there was like a percentage that had to be paid to the management board of that land. And so they could tell that actually there was very little that had been taken, that, you know, none of the things that sort of had been claimed in the environmental impact assessment in 2006 had been, none of the claims had been met. There hadn't been any jobs, there hadn't been any proper mining. So they were perplexed that, you know, suddenly they were saying, and this was a license for feldspar and quartz, suddenly they weren't mining feldspar and quartz, they were looking at lithium. So the mining license had been sold to a company, a British company, what do you call a junior miner? So a company that's never mined anything, they just go around, try and find projects so that then can then sell on to someone else. So, you know, Savannah Resources had two other projects that they then ended up selling on. And they were basically talking about mining lithiums. And so when the mining company asked to enter land to prospect, they thought, well, what can we do? You know, maybe this would be a good thing. They didn't really oppose it, didn't think that they could oppose it. So they allowed the mining company to enter the land. And so they prospected. And as they were prospecting, they sort of became shocked because they realized the amount of destruction that they were already causing.
Se pravi, oni so območje rudnika povečali 120 na skor 600 hektarjev, kar je kar velik. Kako so oni prišli do teh zemljišč, če je lokalna skupnost temu nasprotovala?
Ja, se pravi, Savena je morala del teh zemljišč odkupiti od zasebnih lastnikov. In tukaj je izkoristila eno metodo merjenja teh zemljišč, ki je ne naša sogovornica, ne drugi občani pravzaprav niso poznali. In dejansko so se velikosti nekaterih zemljišč podvojile pač pod merjenju s to metodo. Zdaj, sogovornica to ponazori na nekem hipotetičnem primeru, ko je podjetje kupilo zasebno zemljišče 3 hektarjev, ki je kasneje vključevalo te 3 hektarje in še 3 hektarje skupne zemlje.
They've gone to private landowners who don't even live there, and they basically bought land from them, but before they bought the land, they facilitated the services of a company to go and measure the land. And what they did is, because it was a new process, a new mapping process, which is done through maps, like in Google Maps, where you go and basically register your land by marking the land on this map. And this was all very new. I mean, myself and my neighbors, we had not registered our land in that way. It was something that was completely new. And what they did was this company that that worked for the mining company, the mining company had facilitated or had sort of provided the services of this company for the landowners. They went over and measured the land, and pieces of land, say 3 hectares of land, now had 6. And so that meant that the land that was then sold to Savannah was not the 3 hectares that traditionally that land would have, but 6 hectares. And that meant that the mining company had access to then the 3 hectares of the private landowner plus another 3 hectares of the common land. So this happened with a number of landowners, 5 or 6 of them, and the community had to take the landowners to court.
Čak, se pravi, en del so dobili tako, ampak kaj pa ostalo, ne?
Ja, se pravi, podjetje je potrebovalo v bistvu tudi do zemlje, ki ni bila v zasebni lasti. In takšnih zemljišč je bilo 71%. In to je pač skupna zemlja, na kateri se to, kdo ima pravico dostopa do te zemlje, odloča kolektivno. In tukaj je zdaj v bistvu posegel vmes sekretar za energijo, oziroma pač nekak njegova pisarna, no, da tako rečemo, ki je odredila služnostno odredbo in tako omogočila podjetju, da je dostopalo tudi do te neke skupne zemlje. In Elvis Skerd bo pač v bistvu pojasnil, da pa podjetje je želelo ne samo dostop do te skupne zemlje, ampak tudi do zasebne zemlje.
Another thing that was happening was, you know, that happened now, you know, more recently, is this situation, which is they've got the easement order, which allows them access to certain bits of land, but they actually wanted to have access to other bits of land that were not in the easement order. Or rather, they, you know, imagine there was someone, you know, there's a bit of land that is in the order where they supposedly, according to this order, have got right to go in and to prospect, but because they couldn't use the road that leads to that bit of land, which is the road that they would need to use because it's too narrow and the machines need more space, they then wanted to enter through pieces of land that were not in the easement order. And of course the landowners said no. We do not allow you to access this. And what they were doing was they were using the police to intimidate the landowners to say, well, you're going to go be arrested. So, you know, this happened last week on Friday, where, you know, one of the landowners was basically told, look, if you don't allow us to move this, you know, the trailer that you've left there, you know, we're going to arrest you. So in the end, he had to basically allow them to go in through his land. They then blocked access to his land, so he cannot go and take his sheep there to graze.
Sogovornica je vmes rekla, da je interese podjetja ščitila tudi policija. Kako je to dejansko izgledalo?
Zdaj, težko ti povem, kako dejansko izgleda to v praksi, ampak občani in pa neki lokalni mediji so poročali o tem, kako je državna republikanska garda v bistvu skoraj dnevno v tem kraju in je pač policisti oziroma pripadniki te garde so izvedli tudi veliko nekih, dajva jim reči, sumljivih pregledov in podjetje je tudi najelo neko zasebno varovanje, ki pa bi moralo samo varovati zemljišča.
Sorry, a te sumljivi pregledi česa?
A, ljudi. Ljudi. Se pravi, ustavili so jih, ja, ustavili so jih dejansko, recimo na poti do, sogovornica je omenila primer, pač, kjer so čebelarja ustavili na poti na pregled njegovih čebela. Ne? Pač neki taki zelo vsakodnevni opravki, ki pa jih niso mogli opravljati prav zaradi prisotnosti policije. A ne? In zdaj, v bistvu to zasebno varovanje, ki bi pač morala samo varovati zemljišče od podjetja, so te varnostniki tudi patrulirali ob hišah občanov in na ta način v bistvu popolnoma zmotili, pač, kako sva govorila, njihov vsakdanjik. A ne? In več o vlogi policije pa bo povedala Elvis Skerritt.
In October, November 2023, they were basically attempting to enter areas of this disputed land to go and prospect in the disputed land. So what happened was that the people then, they decided to block the access to that piece of land, to the piece of land that they wanted to enter, that was in dispute and it was in the courts. And so what happened was that, you know, prior to that, the police was sent to the village, which was really, really strange. The community felt really insulted by this, the fact that suddenly they had the police, you know, this is a peaceful community. There isn't any crime. There isn't any, you know, any issues. And suddenly, you know, we had the police presence. And what was happening was, you know, the police stopping people and, you know, in a way implying that, you know, making life really, really difficult, you know, which was really harassing people. And then the other thing that was happening was the mining company insisting that, you know, that they had the right to be there. But on this occasion, you know, and also the police was intimidating some of the people that were doing the blocking, that were blocking there because it was common land. So if they basically were saying the land is theirs, we were saying the land is ours, the case is in the court, and therefore the police could not take their side. They could not take our side. The police basically had to say, look, you know, there's nothing we can do here until the courts resolve the issue. But what the police was doing was very clearly intimidating some of the people that were there, saying, oh, you know, you're going to end up having to pay for the damages, you know, because they've had to stop the machines. You know, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. So that was really, really quite concerning.
Ok, zdaj, nedavno je bilo pa delo na tem območju tudi začasno prekinjeno, ker je ta lokalna iniciativa, del katere je tudi naša sogovornica, v bistvu sprožila sodni proces in pač jim je uspelo dejansko za 2 tedne ustaviti vsa terenska dela, ampak pač nekako po posegu vlade je oziroma pač so se ta terenska dela ponovno začela in rudnik in pač vso iskanje spet obratuje. No, ne rudnik sam, no, ampak pač dela.
There's been quite a few conflicts because the mining company tries to enter land for which they have not been granted permission to enter by the government. Community believes that the order is not, there's no legitimacy. They don't recognize the legitimacy of the order. They have to allow the mining company to enter the land, but they do not recognize the legitimacy to the order as they believe that is based on a false premise. And basically there was an injunction, a court injunction, which was accepted. The work was stopped for a period of 2 weeks. The mining company continued to, they stopped the work, but they continued their machines and their people continued on our land, despite the fact that there was the injunction was granted. Then the government issued a resolution, what they called a resolution that basically said, look, this is, you know, we cannot wait for the court to decide about the injunction. They have to go in. And basically it's something that the Portuguese law allows the Portuguese government to say, this is, you know, overriding public interest. You know, we think that the arguments in there are really quite silly, and we think that you know, once the court hears our side, that basically the resolution be thrown out of court. But we're sort of facing a very slow process because the administrative courts in Portugal are really, really slow, and obviously, you know, very costly for the community as well.
Okay. Gremo nekako samo še za zaključek povzeti vso dogajanje. Se pravi, Evropska komisija je sprejela teh 47 strateških projektov po celotni Evropski uniji in eden izmed njih je pač ta rudnik Barosso, kjer kljub nasprotovanju lokalnih skupnosti in prebivalcev, v bistvu oni še vedno želijo ta rudnik zagnati. In mogoče bi na tej točki omenil samo še te kriterije za strateške projekte, ker eden izmed njih je tudi v bistvu strinjanje lokalnega prebivalstva s tem rudnikom. In lokalno prebivalstvo, kot sva slišala, pač v bistvu jasno nasprotuje izgradnji kakršnega koli rudnika na tem območju, ker gre tudi za neko v bistvu skupnost, ki je precej samozadostna in odvisna od svojega ekosistema. In se pravi, kljub temu so se oni odločili na ta projekt Barosso, označiti za strateški projekt. In v bistvu tukaj se kaže ta značilnost oziroma pač jak narava Evropske komisije in Evropske unije, ki na račun zaslužkov in pač ja, v bistvu izkorišča naš lokalni ekosistem in spodbuja neke te ekstraktivistične projekte, na katerih pa temelji oziroma na katerih si želijo, da bi temeljil ta pač zeleni prehod oziroma spodbujajo rudarjenje za pač samo nek koncept zelenega prehoda, kot ga poznajo oni.
Super, ok, mislim, ni super, ampak kultivirala pa sva Tim in Nik. Srečno.